Welcome. This is the Fly Fishing Journeys podcast with host Rob Giannino, where we have great conversation with really awesome experts from within the fly fishing community. You see, the fly fishing lifestyle is a journey, and we're glad you're on this journey with us. Check out flyfishingjourneys.com for more podcasts, and please subscribe on your favorite podcast player. Here's your host, Rob Giannino.
I have been very fortunate to get to know Landon Mayer as we travel on the Fly Fishing Show tour together. Sitting down with experts in their space is one of the joys of podcasting. Landon is considered one of the top educators in both fly fishing and fly tying today. He's a Colorado guide and author of 6 books, including his latest, Guide Flies, and an ambassador for some of the finest fly fishing companies in the world, like Sims, Fish Pond, and Scientific Anglers. He's also an Umpqua signature fly tire with 12 signature patterns. Sitting down with Fly Fishing Journeys for the second time, we dive into spring fishing tactics. We then discuss the concept of guide flies and how certain flies make it into his guide box and his latest book. Then we finish chatting about fly fishing travel, beautiful peacock bass, and the jungle of the Brazilian Amazon. Stay tuned, as it's going to be a fun and an informative episode. The Fly Fishing Show Tour travels the country every winter. From January until March, the largest consumer fly fishing shows in the world will be in one of 6 locations. The regular stops are Marlboro, Mass., which covers the New England area, Edison, New Jersey, which is the New York, New Jersey, Mid-Atlantic States show, Atlanta, Georgia, Denver, Colorado, Pleasanton, California, the Bay Area show, and finally back to where it all started in Pennsylvania at the Lancaster show. These shows are super fun events that are packed with teaching, presentations, and everything you could ever want to know or see in fly fishing. Find all the details at flyfishingshow.com.
So again, thank you for being back on the podcast. We have Landon Mayer. Landon, pleasure. Thank you for being back second time on our podcast.
Appreciate you, brother. Yeah, it's good to be back. Good to be in the show in Marlboro, and it's been a fun weekend, man.
Yeah, it's been great to have you on the East Coast. Now, you're a Colorado guy.
Yep.
So that's great. Well, I wanted to have you back on the podcast because I wanted to find out what's going on with you recently.
Yeah.
You've got a bunch of stuff happening. You've got a new book out here, Guide Flies.
Yeah.
So tell our listeners a bit about, you know, your background, your guide on the South Platte there in Colorado.
Yep.
Do you guide anywhere else, or what other? Tell us a little bit about what you've been up to.
Yeah, so I guide on the South Platte. That's my primary home waters. I do have permits on the Blue and Silverthorn and permits on the Arkansas River below Pueblo Reservoir, and I've started hosting more trips. I'll be in Dorado Country with Set Fly Fishing this fall. I'll be doing the Amazon again for my second time with Nomadic Waters, and that's also in the fall. So starting to do some travel, some destinations, but my home base is South Platte River. Love that waterway, and you know, the whole watershed in South Park is primarily where I guide.
Tell me about when you say licenses, how does that work? I mean, you say you have, when you're a guide in Colorado, you can't just get your guide license for the whole state and guide anywhere you want?
No, you can get you definitely have to get your license for the state, but then you have permits in specific sections that you can fish. And it's nice for me because on the outskirts of South Park, we have the Blue and Silverthorn, which is a nice fishery. Gives a little bit more diversity to my clients to fish new water. And then we have an awesome fishery in the Arkansas below Pueblo Reservoir during the winter months. It's lower elevation, near 4,000 plus feet, and we get warmer conditions for betas and midges. It's a great winter year-round fishery. So
is that just so you just don't have guides coming from all over the state and like jumping on a river and kind of getting too busy?
Protect it, exactly. Yeah, they, you know, whether it's a moratorium or they just control how many permits are available, it just keeps a lot of the population base balanced, leisure angler, guide angler, and not too much pressure on each specific waterway. So it's nice that they're managing it that way.
I know your foreword here has been written by Pat Dorsey here.
Yeah,
so I know Pat also guides on the South Platte. And
right.
He kind of took us through the winter fishery there on the South Platte.
Yeah.
So maybe what I thought we could kind of get into is how you might fish in Colorado maybe in a spring or summer compared to how you would fish in the winter.
Because
I know he was saying super tiny, like 22 is big.
Yeah.
You'd have more success at 24 and even 26.
Sure.
And I'm like, oh my goodness, I'm going to need like these high end mic, you know, glasses.
Yeah. Stab the tippet.
So, how would relating fishing the South Platte in the winter differ from like a spring or summer fishery?
Yeah, that's a great question. So, the thing I love about the spring transition into summer is that you're dealing with a lot of your activity where at the beginning of spring, the fish are still in migration, still moving. It's a lot of attractor flies, your leeches, your eggs, things that are capturing these trout's attention that have migrated for the spawn or migrated for following food, other fish that are spawning. So you get a lot of eggs, you get a lot of bright flies. Then at the end of spring, the trout start, when they're in post-spawn mode, transitioning to some of the hatches, some of your betas, obviously midges, and then your caddis. So they're going from this activity where they're migrating, then they get into post-spawn, they start concentrating on the hatches, and it's some of the most exciting fishing you can have because you're kind of pre-runoff. The fish are looking at caddis, betas, and midges, so they have more of a menu to choose from. And the feeding activity, when you get that first explosion caddis hatch going on in addition to betas and midges, it's some of the most exciting dry fly fishing you can encounter.
Is that right?
That's awesome.
So, again, for the listeners who don't know, those rainbows, they are going to spawn in the spring.
Yeah, they spawn in the spring. The rainbows, cutthroats, and cubbows. And we always encourage anglers to do the preseason and then do the post-spawn season. You know, while they're spawning, these fish don't actively feed. You can pursue other species, though. For example, the brown trout that are post-spawn from the fall-winter season when these spawn, they become incredibly active in the spring. So some of the best times to catch your larger browns are the browns that are feeding on insects and feeding on rainbow eggs and things of that nature. So you can mix up species, too.
Is there a way to target browns in through the spawn of the rainbows?
Streamers, baby. Swinging leeches and streamers. It's one of the best ways to produce results in the spring. And in fact, whether you're in Colorado, on the White River in the Arkansas, or some of the Great Lake tributaries, all those fish with now the seasonal changes being so drastic. I mean, some of our fall seasons going into the winter can be, you know, December temperatures that would match September. So we're not getting snow as long. We're getting snow in shorter seasons. So the browns will spawn through the winter. Then once spring hits, that they're post-spawn and they're incredibly hungry, all of a sudden they're crushing streamers. And it's one of my favorite ways to catch larger browns on rivers and still waters.
And even for the rainbows, when I was up on the North Platte there in Wyoming out of Casper, you know, we were drifting over. Like, you'd see those fish just on spawn. You know, you'd see them on the beds and, you know, it'd be oars up, rods up, and we'd like...
Let them ride.
Yeah, we'd ride right by them.
Sure.
But we get into the deeper water, and he was saying, like, there's multiple types and multiple species of rainbows in the North Platte that might have different spawning times.
Totally.
So you can kind of get into the deeper pools, still fish for rainbows, but leave the spawning fish alone.
Absolutely, and that's the thing. You're identifying the species, you're identifying the time, and let's face it, one of the great food supplies for any fish, any season, any time of the year can be eggs. It's a non-escaping food supply. I myself, when I guided in Alaska for a year, learned to appreciate eggs.
Mm-hmm.
The value of protein that supplies the trout. So when you're fishing the spawn, you know, just concentrate on deep water, stay away from the riffles and the shallows, and try to tom it, you know, post-spawn or pre-spawn. I love post-spawn because the fish have already spawned. They've expended energy, nutrients, and resource. They're trying to build that back. So it's like they put the feed bags on. I mean, they get so hungry and aggressive, and it's one of your best times to shine. That's why the spring can be so valuable to the angler.
Do you have people that actually like get in a plane and fly out who just so they can get on a couple-day guided trip with you?
Yeah, we do. A lot of times. I mean, what's in Pat can appreciate this and other great guides that have been doing it a long time. You build up these friendships to where it's almost, it's hard to call it work. Hmm. I mean, these are fellow people that you've spent years with. You enjoy time on the water with them, and they know when to target the season. And if you can be flexible, and I can call you and say, look, it turned on, the ice is thawed, the water's up, the fish are moving, can you be here in a week? And if you can make that adjustment, and I can make the adjustment, absolutely. I'll call anglers and they'll get out there within 2 days. It's been 3 days.
Now, are you fishing up and down? I know because we just went through this entire run of the South Platte from, you know, Cheeseman Canyon or Deckers. I mean, do you kind of use the entire waterway system there? How do you approach guiding on the
river? And for example, Pat does a lot of his trips throughout the whole fishery, but his primary focus a lot of times will be Cheeseman and Deckers, kind of the lower end of the South Platte River before it flows into a Waterton Canyon, goes into Denver in that area. Your lower elevation there. And one I like to guide is more of the headwater basin, South Park. It's 200 miles in circumference, one of the largest plateau basins in North America. We have over 20 miles of public river systems in addition to three stillwaters. And that's what I love about South Park is that you have diversity every day. You can be on a river in the morning, stillwater in the afternoon. And I know you're a fan like myself of stillwaters and rivers, and it allows you to become the ultimate angler because you learn techniques for both.
And so you'll have people who will just kind of target that upper section.
Sure. Yeah, the headwaters. And it's about, you know, when you're in South Park, you're the furthest west 9,200 feet. the furthest south when you're dealing with, or furthest east, if you go within the whole plateau basin, it starts at 9,200 and kind of falls down to 8,700 feet. So you're high up in elevation. You're exposed to and surrounded by 14,000-foot peaks, dramatic weather, inclement weather, and it's fun, man.
Beauty.
I love the adventure. Yeah, it's pure beauty, Western beauty for sure.
And can you fish pretty much 12 months?
Yeah, close to. There are days where you get up and it's bluebird skies. You're like, I'm doing it. I'm going for it. You get over Wilkerson, and as you're driving to the top of the pass, it's like 25 degrees. Then you drop down to the other side, and it's like negative 17.
No, I'm out. I'm out. Cancel.
Get a coffee with your client and be like, high five, and like, yeah, we'll do this next time.
So, like, there are some of those February days that you skip, right?
You skip. Yeah, I mean, you test it, and really what you're doing, and I encourage anglers to do this all the time, you're tracking storms. You're looking at weather all the time.
Yep.
Radar is your best friend. You know, clear nights the night before, insulated nights the night before. That's what you're targeting, because you want those insulated dark skies to warm things up. So
are there techniques like spring and summer that would apply to both the South Park area, mm-hmm, or any tailwater?
Oh, absolutely.
Like, what would be like a setup for, sure, like leader if I wanted to fish like a mayor's mini leech?
Oh, absolutely. Well, that's a great question. I think one of my favorite ways to set that fly up is to either use it as a lead fly and trail something behind, or you can use it as a trailing fly behind a streamer. So two scenarios would be a lead fly. You'd have a point fly, anchor fly in the bottom, which is a mini leech jig. Above that, anywhere from 12 to 24 inches, you have a tag with an unweighted mayor's mini leech. So now you're tension drifting with two leeches that are jigging in different water columns and depths in some of the deep runs, tight-knit areas where the fish aren't willing to move or expend energy to move. And you can get around those boulders, rock jams, clusters, little deep pockets where they hold. That's a great way to set up the nymph rig. So you're getting the streamer reaction,
yeah,
without forcing the trout out of its comfort zone. So it's not like it's going to chase the streamer to the bank. A lot of times we deal with streamer bites and the fish will chase the streamer to the bank and then disappear. Chase to the bank and disappear, and it drives us nuts, right?
We're, yeah,
like, oh my gosh, take the fly. So another way that you can use effective streamer techniques and leeches is to trail the leech behind a streamer, 24 to 36 inches. So now you have an unweighted mare's mini leech on a loop knot behind a streamer. So you're attracting the fish to the large streamer, and instead of relying on it to fully commit, it sees that mini leech unweighted, comes over and nails it.
So one of the things I see here in your book is you kind of have some diagrams on,
yes, yep,
like leader setup and how to go about setting up your first fly, your second fly.
Absolutely.
If you're using any weight.
Yeah.
To set up that, would it be like a 9-foot taper leader down to what, like a 4 or 5X?
Yeah, it
and
could
that's
be
where I put, yep, the top fly?
Sure. And you can, well, it depends on what waters you're fishing. If it's a conventional indicator rig, you can do tapered leader where you're going from 5X down to 6, or you're going from 4X down to 5, depending on how clear the water is. You can even go higher in high flows, 3X to 4X. If you're doing Euro rigs or you're trying to really descend down fast and you don't want a thick tapered leader, mm-hmm, you can always build a tippet leader off of, you know, a sighter straight down, off an indicator straight down, or simply no indicator at all, just tension, mm-hmm, drift through the runs. The key is just hitting different water columns, because remember, leeches are found primarily mid-column or higher, especially when they're moving. And the cool thing about leeches is they're found year-round, winter, spring, summer, fall. So you're trying to match that by either swinging your flies to keep it mid-column,
yep,
or have that, you know, the point fly anchored on the bottom and the unweighted leech above it. So you're still hitting mid-column while you're exploring and investigating the deep water.
That's wild. Now, yeah, are you doing, like, triple surgeons knots with the tag to run that second fly?
I do blood knots. You can do, okay, triple surgeons. You can also do half hitch with loop knots and tag connections. There's all kinds of options. I like doing the blood because it goes straight 90 degrees, mm-hmm, from the leader out. So that's a great way. And I'm also, you'll see it in the book, man, I'm a huge fan of micro swivels. So I love using micro swivels instead of tippet rings for the connection, because that cylinder in the middle with two rings, you know, one above, one below, allows more movement and freedom of your leeches.
So as opposed to like a tippet ring, which would be ideal for like a nymph or a small like Euro nymph.
Mm-hmm.
If you're using streamers, you're, mm-hmm, finding you want that swinging action of a micro swivel?
Yeah, micro swivel, and you want the freedom, so it doesn't knot up, it doesn't twist, it doesn't damage the leader and tippet material. And when you're dealing with weighted flies, especially tungsten beads, that gives you a little bit more freedom and movement.
So even on nymphs, still micro swivel?
Yep, micro swivel nymphs. Even dry flies micro swivel now. It's unbelievable.
Okay.
A big hopper, Turn that sucker over. Oh, yeah.
And size, it won't sink it.
Nope. Size 14 micro swivel. You are going to get some sink ratio on that swivel, but it's not enough to really drop down and pull down a larger
drive. Yeah, like a big Chernobyl or something.
Absolutely. Giant chubby.
You fish those out there in Colorado, man. Don't you?
Absolutely.
So what number of book is Guide Flies for you now?
Well, it's my sixth title that I've had in print. This book was really important to me, though, because over the years, you know, when I started angling, some of my mentors like Pat Dorsey, Ed Engel, John Barr was one of my biggest mentors and really allowed some opportunities in the industry. And the guide flies that I really do rely on day in and day out that are in this book are flies that are meant to where when you're on the water, you need a confidence fly, especially when you're teaching others or they're relying on you to catch fish.
Yeah.
And that's what this book represents.
Well, I rebuilt my entire fly boxes.
Yeah.
You know, I was like one of those guys who just start out with those foam fly boxes and you'd buy some flies, you'd stick them in there, and then you go on another trip, get some flies, and you'd stick them in there.
Exactly.
And then you go on another trip, you get some flies and stick them in there, and then you lose some, and it just becomes a mess.
It's a mess, man. It's a mess. Like
so
my class this morning was based on probably 30 minutes in conversation. Like, how do I condense or simplify my fly selection?
Yeah.
Because we're all guilty of it. You know, you have confidence in core flies, but then there's some new fly out there you got to try. And like you said, you grab two of them at the store, and then you know they work incredibly well, and you're like, dang it, I don't have any more.
Yeah.
And it's all been there.
It just began. So I actually made like a very sincere commitment to redo my entire fly box.
Yeah.
And so I'm going to start fresh. I'm going to take everything out. I'm going to throw out that old box.
Nice.
I bought the Orvis Tacky.
Yeah.
You know, the ones that
those are good
Spencer,
boxes.
He could kind of develop with the the slits. And I bought the Orvis Tacky box, and I bought a fatter one for dries, and I bought two thinner ones, double-sided, one for nymphs and one for a full caddis box.
Oh, that's great.
So a caddis box, a nymph box, and a dry box.
Exactly.
And I really worked on filling up that nymph box, and I kind of used like all the latest confidence flies in different sizes.
Sure.
And you know, you're going to have like three different versions of a PT or pheasant tail and a Frenchies, and you know, same thing with, you know, your waltz worms and all your rainbow warriors. And so I kind of and I actually took it super anal. I actually had an Excel sheet for where every line is, and I knew I had 14 on each side.
Right.
And so you do develop those confidence flies.
Totally, 100%. It's important to have them, because if you're focused and you're confident in your rig, and you know exactly what you're going to present or how you want to present it, you approach each run with that positive attitude. And that positive attitude, knowing and confidence that you're going to make the drift and that your flies are going to produce, because presentation is more important than fly selection. But confident flies not only attract fish, but also attract anglers to have confidence to fish them more. And the more that you get that in this industry where somebody's saying, oh man, your leech has worked for me here or worked for me there, it's refreshing to hear that, because I know that the days that I had challenges on the water and I was able to break through with the confidence flies like the Mayor's Mini Leech, other people are experiencing that same positive reward.
Before we jump back into the podcast, here's a short word from one of our fantastic sponsors. Are you a guide, a lodge, or a product manufacturer in the fly fishing or outdoor industry? I want to introduce you to and highlight Cross Current Insurance. Their entire team are great people and experts in their field. They have a guide insurance program that is amazing and very affordable. If you are a lodge or retailer, they also have programs tailored to your needs. These guys fish and are in the outdoors, so they know the industry and the landscape. To get more information on a program that's perfect for you, find them at crosscurrentinsurance.com.
I heard this word confidence flies for the first time from Devin Olson.
Yep.
You know, in his tactical fly fishing videos.
Sure.
And I know you've got a lot of great videos out there, too. Do you actually sell your videos as well? Or?
Yeah, online it's Mastering the Short Game.
Yeah.
It's a video that I produced with Headwaters Media and Jay Nichols. And it's available on Vimeo. You can purchase it now. And we do dries, nymphs, streamers, Colorado, Tennessee, Pennsylvania, and South America is where we filmed.
Wow.
Over the course of 3 years. Yeah, it's really neat.
That must have been an incredible experience.
It was insane. It was amazing. And it has diagrams. It breaks down these flies and talks about 36 different patterns, how to rig these patterns, be effective with the patterns.
But yeah.
Just that, like Devin, man. It's guide flies and confidence in them.
That's
huge.
And I heard about these confidence flies, so I kind of wanted to like rebuild my fly box on that whole style.
Sure.
And so that's kind of what these guide flies are here. Yep. When you were creating the guide flies concept here, Landon, what were you thinking? I mean, was it a mixture of dries, a mixture of streamers, mixture of nymphs? Like,
sure.
Tell me about like your thought process behind how you picked these flies.
Right. Well, great question again. It was breaking down the flies for me was I wanted to include the 12 flies I had with Umpqua, 12 of my signature flies. In addition to that, I wanted to also include 8 flies from other fellow guides and friends that aren't commercialized. Flies that you can't go to a bin or go to a website and find. But these are flies that my friends and other fellow anglers have found confidence in. And all of these are guide flies. And when a guide fly has 3 requirements, it needs to be durable, it needs to be realistic, and it needs to be versatile. And those 3 requirements is what every one of these flies have in the book. We also wanted to deliver nymphs, dries, and streamers. So you have the possibility of when you open up these pages, these are all flies that you can produce on any given water weight, any given time. It was huge. And lastly, whenever I would open up a fly time book before, I'd love the pages. Love seeing the step-by-step ties, learning the history. But a lot of times I was left wondering, man, how do I rig this? How do I set it up? And that's when Dave Hall was kind enough in this book to draw the 8 illustrations demonstrating how to rig, because it's an important part of value to the fly tying book.
Tell our listeners who might not know what a...
Two Midge is an awesome fly. That's one that I first developed in 2005. And the reason for the Two Midge is we were out one day doing a fly tying or a fly fishing clinic. We were seining the water, and I remember picking up these midge larvae in my hand, and they looked as if they were encased in something clear with segmentation. So this story sounds a little cliche, but it's true. So that night, midnight about, I woke up thinking, man, I've got to develop a midge beyond thread and wire. So what I decided to do is go to the lab, being the fly time bench, and really investigate. And what I came up with is small wire inserted into clear microtubing. And the body of the fly is 2 wraps of wire at the bend, forward with microtubing and wires, so you get that great beautiful segmentation while it still looks clear. And then if you match it with either a thread head, tungsten bead, or a gill tuft, you have the ultimate midge. And here's the kicker: there's 8 plus different colored wires on the market, 13 different colored microtubing, so you can mix and match to where it's exactly the same make of what you see in your hand on your own home waters.
Wow. Where do you get this?
So I get my microtubing from Hairline. That's one of the best companies producing that. My wire is UTC wire, which I love using. And my thread is typically, it's either UTC 70D or it's going to be 8-0 uni thread. And the hook, Umpqua Feather Merchants 2488H Heavy. So the H standing for heavy, that's an awesome curved straight eye hook that you could literally tie into a steelhead in size 20 and it won't straighten out. It's an incredibly strong hook.
So you have all your patterns here. You have all the photos. Did you take your photos?
Took them all. 762.
762. Yeah.
Over COVID, that was my project, man. I was at home and studio lights, sweating like a madman and just trying to get these shots.
They're
and what
beautiful.
We also... Oh, thank you, man.
Macro lenses.
Yeah, macro lenses. And the key for these fly tying photos, too, is I didn't want 3 to 6 per page. I wanted each photo to be a 4x6. So there's only 2 per page magnified, so you can really see the depth and detail.
Yeah. Because we're talking about over 200 full-color pages here, hardback.
Yep.
Is it me, or is this like the same exact pattern tied 3 different ways?
It's two different. Yep. So you have
one with like a thicker head, and then one with this.
Yep. Another
shuck.
Another key feature for the book. So in the book, when you tie a fly or design it, you also start thinking about different variations. How can I be more effective? And for example, right there in that photo that we see, we have the tube midge with a thread head, the tube midge with a bead head, and then a tube midge with a gill tuft.
Okay.
3 different ways to represent a midge larva or a pupating midge, and that's a great example there. So through the book, it's not just the fly, it's other variations of the fly.
I think this would work really well for my stillwater trout, too.
Totally.
They love midges.
Totally.
Especially with that gill tuft.
And if you keep going in the pages, you'll see the next one up is going to be the Titan tube midge. That's your coronamid right there, the big brother of the tube midge.
Yeah, we get a lot of those on stillwater for trout here in Massachusetts.
Yep. Absolutely. Yeah, some great. And there's examples of diagrams and how to rig. And
that's what we're talking about here, is like this whole leader setup.
Yeah, Dave Hall did an awesome job with that for sure. It was exciting.
So this is kind of like, I'm a computer geek. You know, I'm a plug and play guy. When I plug something in, I want it to work. Right. I want plug and play. Yeah. You know, I don't want to have to go through a thousand different things.
That's what we want in today's world, for sure.
Yeah, my dad was telling me, you know, he's like, oh, Rob, I got this new printer. You know, I need you to come over and set it up. And I'm like, Dad, let me just tell you over the phone. Take the USB. Stick it into your computer and then follow the prompts. You know, these things are plug and play.
It'll lead you. Exactly. It'll lead you to it.
So that's what's cool about this, you know, your guide flies here is like if I want to set up a whole fly box with a guide's fly box, I can just take these patterns, either time myself or figure out how to get them.
Absolutely.
And, you know, you can be plug and play right there in the water and I can have like a full fly box.
It's a great way to think of it. That's awesome, Robin. I really do think that when you open up the book too, you're going to get more value out of the pages, meaning that it talks about the history. It talks about when to fish the fly, where to fish the fly, and then how to fish the fly with the diagrams included. It is a plug and play. And the nice thing is you're sharing the information and some of these patterns that have brought you success and then other anglers who may not have thought of a way to tie a fly or see a new fly. Next thing you know, they're finding success, and that really is key.
You said something about nomadic waters, and I actually have been seeing some of your stuff on Instagram about traveling and stuff.
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit about the program with nomadic waters, because you hear about like Untamed Angling is a big name in the world. They have places in Bolivia and Cuba.
Right.
And it seems like this Nomadic Waters has multiple locations of lodges around the world.
They do. Well, for them, it's the Amazon base right now, and they're growing. They're getting into some of the bass world for largemouth in Mexico and some other fun stuff to be had. But for me, it was the experience of going to the Rio Negro, tributary to the Amazon, and also the Watamon. Those are their two main fisheries. But what Michael Williams offers the angler and his family, it is just that. It's a family environment. You show up and you get on this beautiful boat, seems like a yacht. You take your shoes off in Barcelos, step on the houseboat, and you're trailing seven bass trackers that are fully carpeted. And every morning you wake up, you travel 20 miles to a new destination. And you can literally do this all barefoot for a week, come back to Barcelos, put your shoes on or your sandals, and you've just experienced some of the most amazing country and people you'll ever encounter.
I mean, so where do you fly from and where do you fly to?
So when you're flying from Denver, we fly into Barcelos. So when we get to Barcelos, we're in Brazil. And then from there, you take the houseboat up the Rio Negro. And then you come back to Barcelos, take the flights and connections back to Denver. And it's the other neat part about Nomadic Waters is they have their own travel agent. So when we're setting up these trips, there's somebody there the whole time getting the trips organized, getting them ready, and especially after COVID, making sure everybody's safe and going to the same destination. It was incredible.
Why did you pick the Rio Negro? Like, tell us about that river. Like, what's the waterway?
Sure.
What's interesting about that waterway?
Yeah, for me, it wasn't necessarily the water. It was Michael. It was going with Michael. Being that it was going to be my first Amazon experience, I wanted to get a lot of what I felt was the culture, the people, the environment, not just the fishing. So it's food. It was, you know, hearing the stories from locals, and all the guides are from that community. So for me, it was the experience of the Amazon. And of course, the peacock bass being the holy grail, and just seeing how aggressive those fish are blew my mind. And going back, it's the same experience every time. And I know that being an outfitter myself and customizing a trip for each one of my clients is very important. The only reason these people come back after 15 years is you keep it fresh and you keep it new. And I know that that's what he's striving to do with Nomadic Waters, so it's been fun.
The peacock bass are the primary fishery?
Sure. Yeah, primary fishery. And this year, you know, he's finding new water. The thing about up there is, just like anywhere you're traveling now, anywhere you have anglers, the pressure is intensifying. And the fact that he's on public waters is what I really appreciate, too, because being public waters myself, where you have a lot of pressure and the fish are not always in the areas you think they should be because they're spooked or wary, it makes it challenging. So he's constantly looking for new zones, looking for new water, and it's incredible. Just, I mean, multiple species, but I'd say the peacock bass is the real highlight. It's amazing.
We're going to take a short commercial break to hear from Tim O'Neill of Norvice.
What makes the Norvice different than another system?
There are a lot of rotary fly tying vices out there. The Norvice is the only vice that will truly spin when you tie flies, and there's a big difference between rotating a vice slowly and spinning it at a bit of a faster RPM. And being able to spin the hook on a zero axis rotations opens up a lot of doors for us in the world of fly tying.
Tell me about the introduction of colors to the Norvice system.
When we obtained the company from Norm, he said to me just a very, very short statement. He said, you know, I always thought a colored Norvice would be a cool item. We brought out five colors: Radical Red, Sunset Orange, Shamrock Green, Liberty Blue, and Royal Purple. We have five colors along with the black that you're accustomed to seeing with Norvice, and we've been doing very well with those.
To find more information and their online store, visit nor-vice.com.
With the Rio Negro and with Nomadic Waters, you know, because I heard, I asked Ben a question about peacock bass and a fishery that he's fished in before. I said, would you consider this like the ultimate destination for peacock bass? And mm-hmm. he said, if you want size, yes.
Right.
If you want quantity, no.
Right.
How would you play that into the Rio Negro and the trip that you do? Like, what would be the is it size and quantity? Is it quantity? Is it size?
Sure.
Tell me about that.
Yeah, I think it's going to be more quantity. There's for sure size. I mean, any given day, you're tying into a fish that's going to exceed 10 pounds, double digits, for sure. But for me, it's also the fact that I can have opportunities at multiple fish. You have a variety of water, and there's so much different areas that you're hitting daily that you're moving 20 miles. It becomes a numbers game. So I think numbers match with size, which is kind of nice because when you're on a trip, if you're hunting specifically big fish, and Ben's exactly right, you want to target that specific location. But if you're there for the adventure and the experience with the option and opportunity of a large, you know, peacock bass, I think that's what Nomadic Water offers.
I think that's really important if you're bringing people. If you're going, you can decide what's good for you.
Yeah.
If you're bringing people, you want everyone smiling and laughing around the dinner table tonight. You don't want
to be excited.
Yeah, you don't want one guy super happy, the rest being like, oh,
I was... Well, then that's the trade-off. You know, it's like anywhere that you're an angler, it's so true. You know, you're trying to give this experience as a host. And a host, and we were talking about it the other night, Ben and I, a host is not somebody who's just on a trip to fish. You're there to host. You're there to help fix casting techniques or figure out what guide's blending well with the client or where can we go the next day. Or if one boat's not working, you're going to make sure all the boats get out. You're the last one out. You know, you're the ambassador for that trip. And when you're hosting it, it's, and as you know, with your travels and journeys and trips, it's very important. So you want everybody to have a shot at these fish. And that's what's nice about numbers over size.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Is there any bycatch involved with a trip like this, or is it pretty much all peacock bass?
Yeah, peacock bass. You have other opportunities, and you know, there's always the whispers of arapaima and things that they'll see along the way. But I think a lot of the anglers that are going on this trip, you'll get some piranha, some peacock bass. There's other opportunities at species. But I think for most people, especially from my neck of the woods, trout country, they're really, those are the two fish that we are looking for. And the other species that come are just a bonus.
Yeah.
They want to see a piranha because we all see piranhas when we were kids on movies and whatnot. And we envision this, you know, finger-eating giant. And half the time, they're like the size of a bluegill. Yeah. But they're just cool, right?
Still going to eat your fingers out.
They still got the teeth. And then the peacock bass is just, you know, it's a largemouth bass with steroids shot into it. It's unbelievable.
Beautiful
fish. Yeah. So it's fun.
So what would be a setup? I mean, am I using a 10-weight? What am I trying to bring on a trip like that?
Yeah, definitely. We did 8s and 10s. I would say that for myself, I was comfortable doing a 9, and I was comfortable doing a 10. I think a 10 is great because if need to, you in bad weather, inclement weather, you can always punch. You know, and you're trying to cast to wood. You're trying to cast in open spots in timber. The other thing you got to keep in mind, too, is that when you hook these fish, you need that backbone lifting power to immediately pull it from the brush.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can't allow those fish to get into the timber. And if you do,
you're
done. Or your stud guide's going to jump off the front of the boat, dive down, and try to help you get that fish
in
out.
In piranha water.
Exactly.
So you also got to push a bigger fly, right, too?
Oh, 100%. And pushing those flies, you know, that's one of the key things is that if you have a quick turnover and you can really punch that fly into the timber and you can pull fish out, man, it makes all the difference in the world.
So we got a 10-weight. What type of leader am I using? Like a 20-pound?
Yeah, we did straight 20. I think we were doing 25 to 35. I got all the – it's, you're not going to believe this. It blew my mind, too. I got all the way up to 50-pound fluoro. And I had a fish explode on the fly, rip me into timber, and break it. It was unbelievable.
Yeah.
They're that strong.
That
you're thinking,
exciting.
I would never have 50-pound fluoro break, and then it happens, and you're going, okay. Anybody got 60?
And what type of flies am I using for a trip like that?
We used a lot of different flash, subtle flies, longer streamers that represent some of the bait fish. I got to say, my favorite go-to fly there was a Whistler. You know, that extended body with the flash and then a collar. It could be schlopping with the beadhead eyes. But it was that extended pearl flash on the tail, you know, that flashaboo that was sitting there just reflecting light all over the place. That's really was one of my main go-tos. But I found And Michael was the same on our trip specifically. It was a long, slim profile, lighter, easier to cast. You know, could be a game changer finesse, could be a whistle. Any one of those flies that's going to allow you to get into the timber, but also reflect movement and light was really key.
When you talk to your customers, your clients who are coming on this trip and you're recommending flies, where would people buy flies for peacock bass?
Oh, man, you can get them directly from Michael's site, but I think you just need to shop the market. I would say Umpqua Feather Merchants, Flyman Group, directly with Michael Williams, Nomadic Waters on his site, Puglisi Flies, really sky's the limit. What you want to do, I think, is have a variety of colors. So, you know, you get the size down, represent the size and movement, and then have some yellow, have some white, have some black. You know, you'd mix up the colors, just like bass anglers in conventional style, where they're changing their baits, changing color, changing movement. That really seemed to be the key.
Well, sounds good. What you're here doing some presentations at the show. What are your presentation topics at the show?
The afternoon is guide flies. I run through my leech series with Umpqua Feather Merchants. I talk about the history of the fly, how it's developed, and how it's relating from the vise and keeping you connected to the water. So the program's neat because you see the visual of the fly, the make of the fly, and then we go into how to rig the fly. And then there's video footage of the fly in use, and all of that comes into play. And that's actually coming up at 1 o'clock, so that's my next venture straight from here. But that one and my casting demo, mastering the short game on the pond, where 80% of trout are caught 20 feet or less, techniques to load the rod when you can't rely on the weight of the fly line, and then the fly tying demos, which are guide flies, and lastly my class, Trout Hunting 101. Been fun, man.
Phenomenal. And you're up top?
Yeah,
so am I at 1 o'clock. Yeah. So we will let you go. Now, how can people buy your book? How can people find out more about your trips if they want to book with you to get out there on the South Platte?
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. Thanks. The best way to reach me is through the website, LandonMayerFlyFishing.com. I'm also on Instagram, on Facebook. You can find me on YouTube with some of the videos and giveaways there as well. And it's just a blast. The fly fishing shows, check us out here.
Yeah.
Look at the programs. Look at how things are going. We got our friend Phil Rally, who's in the corner
snapping some photos.
Pictures. We appreciate everybody coming down. And you know, I really do want to say that I appreciate what you're doing. I think podcasts are great. It's a chance for me to get to know people that I don't always have a chance to see in everyday life. And when people come down to the show, I think they realize quickly that this is all about giving back.
Yeah.
Like, we're here to develop better anglers because that's how we developed as anglers. And, you know, that camaraderie we had with that Engel and Borger and Whitlock and all our legends, Lefty.
Yeah.
They passed that torch on. And you know, we're making sure that that's the same moving forward.
Well, I appreciate you again being on the
Fly
Fishing
Journeys
podcast, Landon.
It's awesome, brother.
Yeah. LandonMayerFlyFishing.com.
LandonMayerFlyFishing.com is the website.
LandonMayerFlyFishing.com. Thanks again, Landon.
Cool. Thanks, brother. Appreciate it, man.
You've been listening to Fly Fishing Journeys with your host, Rob Giannino. To be notified of new episodes, subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, or Google Podcasts. You can follow us on YouTube, Facebook, and Instagram. For past episodes, check out flyfishingjourneys.com. Fly fishing is a journey, and we're glad you're on this journey with us.